In post-World War II Yugoslavia, like in other state socialist countries, the concept of nationalism was understood at two different levels, different and opposite levels. On the one hand, as a positive striving towards affirming a nation's traditions, and consequently, nationalism was stimulated as a way of securing wider political support for the regime. That was certainly an especially risky undertaking in Yugoslavia, as it was a multinational federal state. Therefore, there was constant anxiety over achieving balance and keeping under control the expressions and demands of different nationalisms. On the other hand, nationalism was regarded as a phenomenon threatening the very basis of the society and of the state because of the many ethnic conflicts over territories and positions within the federal state. Also, communist ideologues placed proletarian internationalism as one of the highest goals, and in accordance with that, nationalist tendencies were seen as reactionary and dangerous. Let it be said in passing that defining the relationship between nationalism and proletarian internationalism has never been an easy task for Marxist thinkers, leading them often to ambiguous conclusions. While striving to regulate the relationships among different nationalisms in the country, Yugoslav communist ideologues were aware that the main stumbling block to easing the tensions among them was the long-existing identification of nations with churches. It should be remembered here that in Yugoslavia, the Orthodox Christian religion was observed by the Serbian people who during the communist period lived dominantly in the Republic of Serbia, but had the status of constitutive people in the neighboring republics of Bosnia and Herzegovina and Croatia. Macedonians and Montenegrins were of the same faith, whereas Croats and Slovenians were Catholics. Large Muslim populations, mostly of Slavic ethnic origins, lived mostly in Bosnia and Herzegovina and parts of Serbia, Montenegro and Macedonia. According to the constitution, the freedom of religious belief was guaranteed to every citizen, though in the everyday life things were very different. Because of the identification of nations with churches, the cultural politicians were quick to adopt the Soviet type imposition of atheism, but were soon obliged to admit that the realization of that idea was much more difficult than they had imagined. However, throughout the years between the end of World War II and the dissolution of the country in 1991, official repressions of different kinds and degrees over the activities of churches could be observed. It should be reminded that the Yugoslav state socialist regime was basically totalitarian, but had milder forms of repression than was the case in the countries of the Eastern Bloc. In this paper, I shall address the issue of the place of the Serbian Orthodox sacred music in socialist Yugoslavia, observed by the cultural officials as a strong marker of Serbian nationalism, leaving the Catholic Church outside the scope of its paper. The Serbian Orthodox Church had to endure extremely hard times under state socialism, especially during the first 15 years, including requisition of properties through nationalization, persecution and incarceration of priests and monks who did not hide their anti-communist views, and expulsion of the theological faculty from the University of Belgrade. Highest-ranking politicians were engaged in merciless propaganda against the church, also inspiring all the various activities. Religious education was banned from the state schools, so that it was left to the private sphere to keep the traditional ties with the church alive. Anything associated with the Serbian Orthodox Church as an institution was considered retrograde, linked to bourgeois pre-revolutionary times, and nationalistically motivated. One of the main features of Serbian national identity being its close connection with Orthodox Christianity, as I have already said. Attending church services was observed with suspicion and often openly criticized by party committees at workplaces or in schools. The number of churchgoers was steadily diminishing, and many people even stopped celebrating family patron Saints Day, a traditional custom observed even among less religious people. The sacred Orthodox music shared the harsh destiny of the Serbian Orthodox Church during communism. The first decades under the communist regime had seen an overt hostility of the authorities against any signs of the presence of church tradition in artistic creation. The absurdity of the whole situation could be illustrated by the example of the scandal provoked by the opera Knez od Zeta, Prince of Zeta, composed in 1927 by Peter Konjović, one of the most outstanding Serbian composers of the 20th century. The artist International Theatre in Belgrade had staged the opera for the second time in 1946, were unpleasantly surprised after the first performance was given in 46 by articles in the press in which a scene with Orthodox monks in procession was the object of fierce criticism and comments written by leading communist literary critics. Nobody dared to protest publicly against such base ideological attacks in which the false historic pagans, mystical Orthodox monarchic emotions, apotheosis of the dark mysticism of Orthodoxy and so on were denounced. It is difficult to imagine today how a libretto based on a 19th century romantic drama, which was inspired by an old epic poem, could be seen as so threatening. Although the next performances of the opera were cancelled, Konjović did not suffer negative consequences of that misfortune. On the contrary, his activities were most fruitful during the next several years of his life, and that is one of the paradoxes we could see in Yugoslavia of the times. Another example of the difficulties artists had when dealing with a theme judged sensitive by the officials will be briefly shown in the case of Slava Svetlosti, Word of Light, a stage oratorio by three eminent authors, among them the composer Ljubica Marić. The authors wished to produce a work on one of the most important events in Serbian history, the Kosovo Battle from 1389, and related tragic events by using fragments of authentic texts from the period. Their main preoccupation was how to produce a theatrical work that would be both modern and ritualistic at the same time, and they were aware, naturally, of the overlapping of the sacred and ritualistic features. In her cycle music of Octo Echos, written earlier, the composer Marić had used the melodies from the Serbian Octo Echos, and the presence of fragments of these Orthodox chants in those works was never seen as a problem by party officials or critics, mainly because the texts of the church chants were not present. But when those same works were used in the context of the Word of Light of this oratorio, the staging of the cantata as a complex work performed by actors, dancers, a choir and orchestra, it proved to be unacceptable by the directors of two main theaters in Belgrade. Probably because of its glorification of the deeds of Saint Prince Lazar, who led the Serbian army in the battle, and the inclusion of many Christian elements, which was normal given that the texts were written in the 14th and 15th century. In the end, the director of the Serbian National Theatre in Novi Sad, another town nearby, near Belgrade, showed broadness of spirit and boldness by allowing the cantata to be performed in that theatre. The premiere was performed in February 1967. The work was well received both by the audiences and the critics, but it stayed on the repertoire for only 6 weeks. According to some performers, the work was actually forbidden, although it was not publicly proclaimed so. Although cases such as those of the opera Prince of Zeta and Word of Light were rather rare, they do indicate that the cultural climate of the times was what the cultural climate of the times was like. It is important to bear in mind that there had never been any official ban of sacred music in Yugoslavia because the political leaders were aware that the reactions in the West to such moves would be sharp. Therefore, they allowed the presence of sacred music in concert halls and in different other occasions, but only in controlled, very small measure. If we go through the concert programs given during the two post-war decades in Belgrade, it will be surprising to see that in 1945, Radio Belgrade Orchestra performed the Easter Overture of Rimsky-Korsakov, but it was probably primarily an homage to the Soviet-Yugoslav friendship, like so many other works of Russian composers which dominated the programs until the breakup between the two countries in 1948. The successful performances of Handel's Messiah in 1953, of Mozart's Requiem also in 1953, were important dates because they opened the door to performing sacred music of great Western composers, the shortened version of Bach's Saint Matthew Passion in 56, Missa Solemnis Babette in 57, and so on. Those works were rightly regarded as belonging to the world's art music treasury. That view, however, not being applied to Orthodox liturgies and operas, requiems of Serbian and Russian composers for about a quarter of a century, probably because they were seen as inseparable from the church context. According to Darinka Simic-Mitrovic, a long-time music editor of Radio Belgrade during the communist period, I'm quoting her now, what she told me, Orthodox music on church Slavonic texts was treated differently in comparison with Catholic and pro-Protestant music. The officials were convinced that Orthodox music would certainly provoke religious feelings among the audiences in Serbia, which was not at all acceptable. End of quotation. In spite of all the unfavorable political circumstances, small steps in the direction of adequate treatment of Orthodox sacred music were being made, most carefully, of course. In 1951, a choir was founded that was able to fulfill its goal of to create a varied repertoire by putting weight on Christian church music, both Orthodox and Catholic, without special obstacles. It was certainly a wise concept not to focus exclusively on Orthodox tradition, as was the choice of its name, the Belgrade Madrigalists. Little by little, in addition to English madrigals, short pieces or movements from longer church works of Serbian composers of the 19th and 20th century were included in concert programs. The choir made successful tours in the country and abroad and even won some important prizes in Langholmen and in Arezzo in 1962. It is especially noteworthy that the earliest known Serbian composition, the monophonic Ninja Sili Nebesnje, by Stefan the Serb, 15th century, was performed for the first time at the concert of the Belgrade Madrigalists. It was sung at the concert given in Ohrid, Macedonia, in 61, in the context of the 12th Congress of Byzantine Studies. At the time, the conductor of the choir was Dimitrije Stefanović, a musicologist who was doing his doctoral studies in Oxford at the time with the great scholar Egon Veles, and who had transcribed the piece from the pneumatic manuscript a short time before. He recalls today, Dimitrije Stefanović, the conductor, that permission from the vice president of Yugoslavia, Rodolfo Čolaković, was needed in order that this short but important work be performed. According to available data, the first post-war performance of Tchaikovsky's liturgy took place in Ljubljana on 18th of October 68, sung by the choir of Radio Television Belgrade. Next year, that work was performed by the same ensemble at the Dubrovnik Summer Festival, but Belgrade had to wait one more year to hear it in 1970. According again to Darinka Simic-Mitrovic, she was editor and she was a member of the Communist Party at the time and an important person at Radio Belgrade, and what she told me recently is that it was right to sing it, the liturgy by Tchaikovsky, it was right to sing it in Ljubljana and Dubrovnik, so out of the Republic of Serbia, to the Catholic audience, but in Orthodox Serbia that would be a bad idea. That is what she said, and she added that she herself did her best to organize a closed performance of that work in the building of the Radio Belgrade, so that the decision makers would see for themselves that that music was harmless. After much further discussion, it was accepted that the liturgy be performed at the Kovarac Hall. Music lovers in Yugoslavia, especially Serbia, were also eager to hear the liturgy of St. John Chrysostom by Stevan Mokranjac, a true masterpiece of Serbian music composed in 1896. The first concert performance of the work after World War II was given by the Belgrade Madrigalists again at the festival in Perugia as late as 1966 and next year in Belgrade. Although the activities of the conductors who performed these works seemed to promise, the quick establishment of liturgical works by Stefan Mokranjac and other composers on regular concert programs, there were still a number of obstacles to overcome in order to achieve that. That could be observed by following the evolution of the attitudes towards the place of sacred music of the organizers of the festival Mokranjac Days, held in his hometown Negotin every year since 1966. Since it is widely accepted that Mokranjac's sacred and secular works are of equal quality, both genres were performed on the festival concerts, except that the organizers were not ready to allow performances of complete works, like the liturgy or the opera, but only of individual movements from them. Therefore, the first performance of the composer's liturgy in a church within the framework of the 1978 festival, so as late as 1978, sung by Collegium Musicum, a very good choir, and conducted by Darinka Matej-Mirmanovic, was an exceptional and surprising case, as was written at the time, almost the result of a lack of attention of the guardians of the communist ideology. 4 years later, in 1982, the choir Ivan Goran Kovacic from Zagreb, so from Croatia, conducted by Vladimir Krančević, sent liturgies by Mokranjac and Čajkovski in the hall of the Vatrogasni dom in Negotin. So it was always easier when a choir coming from another republic sang, so it seemed less harmful. I will skip something because I think we don't have enough time, and now I shall say this. Times changed for the better after Tito's death in 1980, although not always without antagonism. In the area of culture, positive developments in the direction of wider freedom of expression could be noticed, although there was also resistance to such orientation and the will to keep things under control, the way they used to be earlier. Important events took place in 1981, when the 125th anniversary of Mokranjac's birth was celebrated. Although by that time sacred music was more easily accepted by the cultural officials, it was found necessary that the concerts by the Radio Belgrade Choir conducted by Mladen Jagoš, with Mokranjac's liturgy on the program, should be carefully presented first in another republic, not Serbia, for instance in Ohrid, and the smaller town of Negotin, before the concert in Belgrade at the Bemus Festival, the first concert performance in Belgrade after 1967, and in the same Arts Hall. So many years, more than 20, had passed since that. The idea behind it was to check if in another Yugoslav republics there were any negative feelings towards the sacred music composed by a Serbian composer, if that would be just as a nationalistic movement and gesture. The concert in Belgrade, which had a resounding positive echo, was in fact part of the project of releasing an LP album with all the composer's works, including the sacred ones, of course. The album appeared next year, in 82, and was a great success. So at last, after many efforts and obstacles, the only professional choir in Serbia recorded and released that great sacred work, the most outstanding work of that genre in the history of Serbian music. Today, generations born in the last decades of communist Yugoslavia and later find it difficult to understand all the dogmatic prejudices that had to be surmounted during Tito's soft dictatorship, if one wished to continue the pre-war practices of performing sacred music out of church, in concert halls and other public areas. The decision makers among cultural officials were so obsessed with the threat that the Orthodox Church, according to them, represented to the regime, that for a long time they were not able to accept that sacred music could have aesthetic effects and should not be regarded as a display of Serbian nationalism. The first step in the right direction was allowing concert performances of great sacred works by composers such as Bach, Mozart and Verdi, but for the authorities it was much more difficult to let sacred music from the Orthodox repertoire get its deserved place in concerts and media and be considered as belonging to both the church and secular spheres. Only after the fall of the communist regime was it possible for the Serbian people to fully re-establish ties with its religious tradition and to integrate Orthodox sacred music into the national canon of art music. Thank you.